Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast. Today is Thursday, May 10th, 2018, otherwise known as Clean Up Your Room Day. I'm Chris Salamone, and with me as always are Mike Montgomery and Ben Ueda, two guys who need to clean their garage. What's up?
That is correct, sir.
I could just take a guess based off knowing you.
Well, I just got back from the UK, and I will say the house seems a tad bit messier than when
really?
I left.
So you're the one keeping things in order.
Yeah, I'm not pointing any fingers or anything.
Yeah, I think it's actually was a lot cleaner than when you guys left.
I think we should go ahead and kick off the show right and start talking about some plywood challenge entries.
Cool.
Because if you have not been scrolling through the hashtag Rockler Plywood Challenge feed on Instagram, you are missing out because people are building some really amazing things.
Indeed.
Who wants to take this off?
Go for it, Ben.
Yeah, there's some really incredible projects on there. I've just been overwhelmed by the quantity of the quality is incredibly impressive. There's two that I'm going to bring up. The first one is from Eric Didit, which we may have mentioned before, but now it's really taking shape. And it's this sort of media console with built-in speakers, and it is the hotness. Real good use of end grain, but not just using end grain. It also uses plywood in its more typical sort of functional capacities. So it's one of those projects that's showing off the complete range of versatility from plywood. The other one is from Imagine It and Make It. These are both Instagram handles. And it's a plywood side table. And it's just really, really cool. It's sort of two-toned. It reminds me a little bit of like the concrete side table that I did in terms of its form. And then it has like this little walnut shelf. Very quirky, kind of fun. It kind of looks like one of those like little retro old TV cabinets. And both two really impressive projects that are using plywood in a lot of different ways.
Totally. Yeah, those looked really, really nice. And for those who don't already know, on the Modern Maker Podcast Instagram, we're doing a wrap up every week of the projects that are kind of standouts and what we think are cool. So make sure go to that post and then that will link to everyone that we're talking about. So make sure and give those people some love. Follow them and keep up with what they're building. So Chris,
yep.
Who are you shouting out?
I'm going to shout out, I feel like it's mandatory. His Instagram handle is JG, and that's J-A-A-Y-J-E-E-E-E, three E's. And the reason that I feel compelled is because he built a trapezoidal entertainment unit, which, you know, that's near and dear to my heart with the Bad Larry. So it's really cool. One sheet of plywood. He made a YouTube video, so go check him out. Check out the post. Check out the video because he goes over it in detail. He used so he fit it all onto one sheet of plywood, obviously, and then he used a little piece of glass as a shelf. And I can't remember the exact specifics that he mentions, but it's like, you know, four dowels and four brad nails. Like, he listed every single little thing that he used, and it's barely anything, but did a really good job on it. It has some cool doors that kind of like pivot around, not quite the center, I don't think. I think it's like slightly off center, but they pivot around to open. So yeah, really cool project, and definitely go check that one out.
What do you call that when someone's kind of paying homage to their inspiration?
Copying. Just joking.
No. Yep. It was definitely just a blatant ripoff. No, I'm kidding. It was really cool.
You did a good job with it.
Yeah. So mine this week is from a guy. His Instagram handle is Jonathan. And then I'm going to say Pruc. It is P-R-U-C. So however you pronounce that, that is what it is. But he built a coffee table. And I've never seen this before. This is what I love about the project, where people are coming up with all of these little quirks and like left turns that make, you know, a relatively, you know, simple or straightforward project really unique. And so he built a coffee table. If it was on its own, it would look really cool. But what he did was make a groove for your kind of coffee table book or whatever magazine you would leave spread open on top of the table. Really cool project. He stained everything black on black on black, which is kind of a look that I'm starting to dig more and more lately. And he built everything out of a single sheet of Baltic birch plywood. Nothing else added. So that was really neat as well. Hashtag Rockler Plywood Challenge. If you're not building something yet, you still have time.
Plenty.
It's not over until the end of the month.
Yep.
So build something cool, be creative, and be a part of a cool community challenge.
I thought you were going to say be a part of history, which I guess you'd be part of too.
You know, that's really what it is. We're making history here, people.
One piece at a time.
That's hilarious. Chris, yeah. Are you building anything this week? Are you back into the swing?
I'm back into the swing, baby. I've been editing hard on, man, so that record player video is going to be long. Like, I'm still not quite done editing it yet, but I think it's going to end up being like probably 18 to 20 minutes would be my guess at this point. It's like a half hour sitcom with commercials.
Yeah, you might as well just go for a full 22 minutes at this point.
I know. Why stop, right? Yeah, I'm hoping that'll be out early next week. Did we ever talk about on the podcast how poorly both of my little planter videos did?
No, let's make this
another... They bombed, man.
Let's make this another Chris therapy session episode.
I think people don't want to see like small, cute projects from me. Hmm. They're not feeling it.
Really? So,
which is fine.
Yeah, I remember the CNC version kind of for like not to be rude, but it kind of flopped. The video flopped a little bit.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's just a fact.
And then you made a version with no CNC, all kind of like normal power tools, and that one didn't do well either.
I think it might have done worse. I don't know.
Oh no!
It probably did about the same on the first day, but both of them did poorly. I would say relatively poorly, which I don't know, man. Like I actually genuinely like those projects. Like I had a lot of fun designing them, and I thought it was like a good design challenge, just in like a different way of thinking and everything. But
yeah, I remember you were texting us and sending us pictures, and you were like, "This might be my favorite project in a while."
Yeah, I mean, I think I even said in the CNC one that that's my favorite small project that I've done.
Yeah.
On the channel so far, but the people did not agree.
The tribe has spoken.
Yeah, I'm out.
Well, that's not necessarily... I mean, it's interesting. I'm interested in how you take that data, right? Because I still wouldn't necessarily conclude that you shouldn't do projects like that. So what it means is that your current audience may not find that kind of project very interesting. So it might mean that those thumbnails to your current subscribers are not the most attractive. But... it also might mean that, you know, those projects can bring in new audience for people that are different than your current audience, which is part of audience growth.
Right.
So whenever I do something new, a lot of the existing audience complains, but I'm doing it to try to bring in new people and add them to the existing audience. So again, I would look at if you got unsubscribes, a lot of people unsubscribed from your channel because of those, which I highly doubt.
I don't think so.
Then I would... consider not doing them again. But the other thing is it might just mean you can't shop those projects or promote those projects through the typical ways. You might have to start promoting them on different channels. So for example, you did it with Inventables, have them start promoting the one that you used the CNC for, right? They're doing an upcoming promotion with like, you know, CNC projects that can be done quickly.
Yeah,
I think with like an hour or less of carve time.
Mm-hmm.
So it might mean that you need to promote through sort of CNC channels or more kind of craft and arts and crafts kind of channels and websites and reach out to different blogs and stuff like that that might want to feature that content rather than the sort of typical Reddit woodworking thing,
right.
Which I could totally see how that audience isn't interested in it. So what it's saying is that we know it's a good project, right? You believe it's a good project. Me and Mike, when we both saw it, we both thought like, it has a good aesthetic. It's achievable. So it is a good project. It just means that you've curated an audience that more wants to see, heroic performances of woodworking than they want to see projects that are quick and easy for them to do. Which just means you got to add more people and let people know that you also do these kind of things and bring them in as well.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same thing with the modern picnic table. Next time I put one out, my audience is ready.
No, that was just terrible.
Nope.
They're ready
for it. It's a good project. I don't care what you say.
They just weren't ready for it. Yeah, man. No, I think that also when it comes to choosing projects, I mean, at the end of the day, and I think we would all agree with this, is you're going to build the things you want to build. So if you're excited about an idea, like the day that I'm excited about an idea and I choose not to do it because I don't think people will like it is the day that this becomes purely a job and not enjoyable anymore. So I don't want to get to that point.
Totally. And same thing with publishing a video. If you think the project is dope before you put the video out, but then because it doesn't get as many views as you want and you let that affect the way you view the project, I think that's just as bad too. You know, you can't let success be determined by how many people watch it because that's something you can't control. You can only control like what you build and what it looks like.
Right.
Sweet. Ben, what are you doing, man?
I've been also editing quite a bit. So So I just posted the metal and oak table that I did, and very pleased with that. It was a fun project. It went through, it's funny, we went through a lot of different combinations of legs and tops. So we started with a actual, which didn't make it into the YouTube video, a walnut live edge tabletop and the raw steel legs. But the walnut tabletop was just way too small. The legs were all sort of, you know, crowded together too much. So then we did a plywood version. And then we're like, ooh, this looks, it looks pretty good. Like, I was almost comfortable just sort of going with that. It was affordable. It looked awesome. And I was like, you know what? I really like how the sort of legs have these facets and all these aggressive angles. I want the whole thing to be black. So then we stained the plywood top black and, you know, routed some more angles onto it.
Full Darth Vader.
Yeah, full Darth Vader, stealth, ninja table mode. And aesthetically, I thought it was actually the most unique kind of look of all the sort of incarnations it had. But I want to use this table for the tiny house that we're building. So I needed something that would be a little bit more white and oak. So I think the finished version is the most finished and definitely the nicest tabletop version. It was a fun video just because the sort of ninja version and then the finished version, the images tone-wise, even though the forms are similar, the tone-wise are just so different. And it was a great reminder of how you can take the same geometry into two totally different directions with sort of paint and stain. And from a content standpoint, it's actually a great thing because now I can get two thumbnails that lead to the same video. So if I put those two thumbnails on Pinterest, I can get people that have totally different aesthetic interests and get the people that want sort of like a dark goth-like interior and people that want something sort of like fresh and feels like an Apple store. So it was kind of it was a lot of fun. I'm really happy. I think it's the nicest table that I've built. And, you know, I learned that, so the way I sort of constructed it, I made these sort of oak beams, and I was planning on using a biscuit joiner to join them together, but the way I sort of glued up the beams, there wasn't room for the biscuit joiner, so I switched to a slot cutting bit on the palm router, and that worked great, and that's a great trick. I mean, a biscuit joiner is sort of like a one-trick tool. You know, I kind of really recommend using a palm router and a slot cutting bit because you can also use the palm router for a lot more.
And I'll tell you what, I've been using that palm router so much since I've gotten it. Same with you, too.
Yeah.
It's so handy just not having to deal with a cord and be able to break it out really quick because, I mean, it's probably strong enough for like 90% of things, like anything other than maybe routing some super deep grooves or like surfacing a slab. But for the most every other application, it's really handy and really light.
Yeah, that palm router is the best new tool I've seen this year. It's compact. The battery life is outstanding. I flattened a whole slab of wood with it using a router jig before for one of the dwell videos. Mm-hmm. And batteries keep getting better and better. And that was the other cool thing. Like, my biscuit joiner has a cord, you know? The palm router is way smaller, can travel with you. Way more options. I can actually change the thickness of the slot cutting bits. And the slot cutting bit that I got from Harbor Freight was only like, you know, $19. So palm router, get one. They're awesome.
Palm router for the win.
I was going to say, if I could pay you the ultimate compliment on that dining table video is after I watched it, I felt like excited. I was like, oh, I want to go work with some metal. Cause it looked like such an easy technique that you used. And it was like totally my style of leg, like very geometric and angled and everything. It got me pumped for metalworking.
Oh, 100%. Chris, if you did some metalworking, dude, you would crush.
Crush it.
I think what was interesting about the legs is, one, you can cut really straight lines with an angle grinder. It's a little bit...
Is that just because you're working like in slow motion or something? Like,
no.
Like you're in bullet time or something or what?
It's just the nature of the material and an abrasive blade, right? There's no teeth that are kind of jerking it all around. And you can sort of do a groove first on your first pass and then...
The disc kind of follows that along.
Right. It also, the nature of the metal cutting slower makes it sort of easier to be more accurate.
Right.
The revelations that I sort of had after that project are, one, I think when people assume about welding metal together, they always think about welding the pieces in plane and then grinding everything flush. I think the first sort of design move that this did was saying you can almost have like layers of the metal the same way you would wood, right? Like the bracket part that attaches to the underside of the table is on a different level than the leg, right? So there's a harsh line. We didn't try to fill that in and then grind it all smooth. So I think that's the first thing is sort of saying there actually can be sort of like an overlap, a lap joint with metal, and it's welded on the backside.
Yeah, it's sort of like the evolution of the plywood stacking idea, but then incorporating with that material, and it's just like, it's super clean and going to be way stronger than any kind of wood joint. So yeah, it's killer.
Right. So it gave it that extra facet, which made it kind of look like, you know, like a stealth fighter kind of a thing. So that was the first thing. And then, you know, I think the other thing that I was thinking after this is I kind of, you know, seeing how easy it is to cut straight lines with a you know, an angle grinder, which is, again, super inexpensive tool. I kind of been thinking of getting just like a big sheet of like eighth inch steel and just start cutting out shapes and welding them together, almost like the same way I would sort of plan out like a CNC project. So it was a really fun, interesting project, and it definitely, I mean, we see so many, you know, steel welded table legs, right, that are like tube steel, flat stock, or, you know, a lot of little rods, sort of hairpin style. You know, this one was kind of fun. It was also an interesting way to use angle sections, which are normally kind of considered kind of ugly.
Mike, what you've been working on?
I have successfully found some vintage furniture that I can
refurbish. Oh, man, you're still on the quest?
No, I'm not on the quest. I'm done with the quest. I succeeded.
It's over.
Yeah. I felt like I was
still on it.
I felt like I was going through Skyrim or something. Like, it was just like the longest storyline ever. But
you had to level up before you could find the piece.
Exactly. Exactly. So, little backstory. Last week or the week before, Jesse and I ran around Joshua Tree one day to all of the vintage shops to try and find a vintage console table, a vintage dining table, something unique, anything at all. I just really want to do some kind of like thrift store challenge, essentially, of finding an old piece and then putting some kind of twist on it to make it cool and give it new life. The problem with Joshua Tree, though, is everything in these shops are kind of geared towards tourists, mostly, that are kind of coming into town or flying into town and kind of want a memento or a take home that they can have and, you know, put in their backpack. So there's not really a lot of furniture. So after we did that one day, the next day we went down to Palm Springs and kind of did the same thing. Different challenges, same result. That was because everything is either a 100% beautiful, perfect antique that I have no right cutting into, and I feel like I would just get slammed in the comment section if I have this like beautiful antique that I'm just desecrating by cutting into it and ruining it. So I didn't even want to mess with that. Not to mention, you know, a decent looking antique there is like $1,000. So Palm Springs was also, unfortunately, a no-go. But I went on Craigslist. Why did I not go on Craigslist sooner? Because...
Oh, yeah. You nut.
You crazy? Yeah, I was a nut. Thanks, Chris. burn.
Sick burn.
So yeah, I should have gone to Craigslist sooner. There was a few different potential projects. I don't want to tease them because I still might do them later on, but the one thing I did buy was an off-brand AIM-style lounge chair outdoor rocker. So if you're familiar with the AIM's lounge chair, it's kind of a bent laminated plywood frame with a bunch of metal joints and base. It's really great. It's literally my dream project. I want to build something like that one day, but I'm still not good enough of a craftsman. But what I did find... it's a company called HomeRight. They built an outdoor furniture version of this. So instead of being a solid plywood and metal frame, it's actually wire. So like, it's all really thin metal, and it's built out of round, like just like probably 3/8 inch, maybe 1/4 inch steel rod. So it's got a really unique look. Right now it's black and it's kind of scratched up and has a little rust spot here and there. So even if it was in perfect condition, I would still want to paint it white just to get the look that I want. So the game plan is to, one, paint that frame flat white, get it looking nice and crisp. Then I'm going to bend some plywood to fit the frame and then cover that with a little bit of foam and then wrap it in a vinyl leather. Nice. I'm really excited for it. I'm going to carve out some wooden armrests because right now it's just black plastic and it looks cheap. So I think I'm going to be able to add a ton of value. It only cost me $75 and about another $150 in vinyl and foam and all of that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a fun project. It's going to be unique, but it'll hopefully be a good kind of like inspiration piece of just showing like, I just scrolled through Craigslist, found something cool, and ran with it. So hopefully it performs well so that I can do it more often. It was kind of the same thing with the IKEA hack series that I posted not too long ago. I'd been wanting to do it for a long time, was halfway sure it was going to do well, but also nervous that it wouldn't. I was able to launch the first video. People liked it a lot, and then I was able to do one or two more. So hopefully this is the same thing where I can basically have a little series of videos where I can take some furniture that needs some TLC or some out-of-the-box vintage items and just give them new life.
Breathe some new life into them.
Exactly. And we talked about the TV lift cabinet idea, and yep. I'm just going to say it. You know what? This is a podcast.
Go for it.
I can trust you people not to steal my idea.
I'm taking it. Hang on, let me get my pen.
Yeah, exactly. Let me write this down. And the measurements were what? Is all of these vintage shops that I was going to, I was seeing all of these locker cubbies. So the kind that you would have in like an employee break room, the ones that are all square fronted. So the ones in schools are like the big rectangular shaped lockers.
Yeah.
These are the small kind of cubby ones. The ones that you would find at a public pool.
Ooh.
Usually these locker stacks are, you know, hypothetically 4 lockers wide and maybe 8 lockers tall.
Uh-huh.
My idea is to rearrange the lockers so that it's 2 lockers high and maybe 4 lockers wide, maybe 6, maybe 8. I need to see it in person to get the proportion right. But use that as the case for a console table. Either do a wood frame or a quick welded frame and then cut a hole in the top, put a TV lift cabinet in it and make that a media console that has kind of 2 different looks you could go for, kind of similar to what we were talking about with you, Ben, is I can paint it all like real crisp, real white, maybe an accent color here or there. Or if I find a set of lockers that kind of have some patina to them, for lack of better terms, I can keep that raw industrial loft vibe and, you know, make it look just beefy and mean.
Mike, I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
While you were describing that, I went and built it, and I'm uploading it to YouTube right now.
Well, let me know how the audience views it.
I'll report back next week.
Did you at least shout me out?
Yeah, I was like, and thanks to good old Mark Montgomery for the idea.
Wait, Mike, how was your UK trip?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this completely. I was gone for most of the week. That's why I wasn't able to get too much done build-wise. I ended up scheduling a plane ticket to go to Makers Central like 2 weeks before the show. I had a serious case of FOMO, and I hate saying that. That's the worst. That's even worse than BOGO, like buy one, get one.
Buy one, get one. Shouldn't it be BOGOF? Buy one, get one free?
Well, it depends. Maybe you're getting buy one, get one half off.
Ooh.
A lot of people do that as well. So.
That's BOGOHO.
right. You're quick with the acronyms. I like
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I went to the UK this weekend. It was a ton of fun for an event called Makers Central, which, from my understanding, was the really first big makers convention, similar to what we all went to in Atlanta for WorkbenchCon a couple months ago. I was there. Laura Kampf was there. Jimmy, Bob. All the who's.
Except for,
you know, Ben and Chris.
Present company.
But it was really great. I was able to meet some UK fans, rub shoulders with other influencers, and all those things that make me sound really pretentious.
Was it, like, I saw a lot of the videos people were sharing, and it looked bigger. It looked like there were more people there than WorkbenchCon, or was it that there was, like, only one talk going on at a time?
So they kind of structured everything a little bit differently. WorkbenchCon was kind of geared towards people in the community that were interested in also making content. So there was a lot of talks about, you know, building audience. Like our talk, Chris, was kind of about how to formulate a good style and make, you know, good, efficient content. But most of this was really kind of geared towards the fans. So the price was lower, but more people showed up.
Okay.
I think there was, over the weekend, like 6,000 people that came.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive. And that was in Birmingham, which is about 2 hours of a train ride outside of LA. Or, I'm sorry, London.
You're way off, buddy.
Anne of all trades. Ashley Harwood and some other people were doing like lathe demonstrations. Jesse and Bob Claggett, Peter Brown, and Jocko Whatever were all on a panel doing a Q&A together. So they had a good mix of fan interaction and then opportunities for the people to show up and kind of learn from people that are good at things. So it was a lot of fun. The overall vibe was great. I didn't do any sightseeing, though. It was basically hang out at the convention center until 6 and then go get dinner and drink beer at the hotel lobby until bed. So next time I'm going to have to schedule a few days so that I can actually see what the UK is like.
Yeah.
But from what I heard, the event was a huge success. And Nick from NZ Woodworking, who put it all on, was really, really happy with kind of the turnout. So I think he's definitely planning on doing it again next year. So if you didn't make it, wink, wink, Chris Ben, make it next year because it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we're going to be covered for sort of get-togethers because I recently talked to the organizers for WorkbenchCon and we're definitely doing another one.
Yeah, I saw
one.
That they said they're doing it.
Yep, we're definitely doing another one this next year. So we're still in the process of working out the details and putting together the list of speakers and stuff. But the three of us will all be attending and we'll be there. And yeah, very excited. So there will be another, a second version of the WorkbenchCon and it's going to be bigger and badder.
Boom. So be there.
Yeah. And better.
Yeah.
Bigger, badder, better. Cool. So, you know, speaking of losers, I had another failure on my hands. I've been talking about a lot of those lately.
Yeah, this is a real reoccurring theme.
I'm becoming a loser. That was my goal going into 2018, and so far so good.
I just came up with a great title for this episode.
What? Chris is a loser.
No, well, you know what? That's kind of mean. I was going to say Chris's descent into loserdom.
Okay. But spell it D-U-M-B.
Oh, wow. Loser dumb. Yeah, not bad. Not
now
bad.
We're going. Okay, so now back to my latest failure is the furniture thing is officially over.
The selling furniture thing?
Yes. You can buy furniture at an extreme discount now.
Oh, man.
Everything's discounted like 50%. So, I mean, I'm not too bummed about it. Honestly, I think I probably said it on here that I went into it with a skeptical
optimism.
That's what I said. Cautious optimism. I couldn't remember what I said, but I was optimistic, but it was like, nothing's probably going to come from it. And nothing came from it. If you do want to buy any of that furniture, there are still a few pieces left and they're like super discounted. I think they're like 50% of what the cost was before. So go check that out. You can just go to my website and there's a shop link that'll take you to it. But basically, from the company's point of view, it was actually kind of a success. So what ended up happening was something got brought their way because of the exposure on my channel. So it basically led to a big hotel job for them.
Oh, wow.
So what they invested into it, they got back. So from their perspective, it was fine. From my perspective, I mean, I didn't lose anything but my time, I guess, in, you know, trying to do it. That's fine. Definitely learned a few things from it. I would say the biggest takeaway, and I don't totally blame myself for this because I did try to push on this. Maybe I could have pushed a little bit harder and it wasn't happening, was I really felt like they needed a better website. Like their website was not good. Yeah. The pictures were not good.
Right.
In fact, the pictures that we put up were renderings that I had to get made by one of my friends, Inkstrom Design. I talked about him last week. He does rendering in Blender. So he was nice enough to render a few images out for me that looked real. So a lot of people probably didn't know that they were fake, but I felt like if they could have made a better web experience, taken some good pictures, you know, do those obvious things, and then we could have publicized it a little bit more, you know?
Right.
I would have been happier about it and more likely to talk about it in another YouTube video. We could have, you know, tried to buy some spots on, or, you know, do some advertising on Instagram or Facebook or something, just put a little bit of money into it. Because, I mean, honestly, I mean, the people listening to this podcast, the people who watch me on YouTube, those are people that are more interested in building furniture than buying furniture.
Yeah.
So I think it would have helped a lot to have put a little bit of money in just, you know, seeing where that could have gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the takeaway is, like, that was the first time you had really kind of leaned on working with another company or another brand and letting them mm-hmm. make decisions at a pretty high capacity.
Yeah, I mean, the final decisions were in their hands. Like I said, so both of those, the website and putting money into other areas to try to advertise it, I recommended those things multiple times, but, you know.
Yeah.
I can only, that's all I can do is recommend.
Yeah, you know what I think would be pretty sweet is, have you heard of the company Floyd? They do like the Floyd legs, and they do a few other things.
Uh-huh.
But it's like a flat pack furniture company. And I think that would be a really, I mean, isn't that how you got into kind of the whole furniture thing in the first place, was designing a flat pack line?
Flat pack. Yeah, flat pack. I had a few flat pack pieces that I would sell in addition to the custom pieces. And that was just because I wanted to have something affordable.
Yeah.
So like when I was doing it, I think, oh man, I can't even remember now, but they were around like $300 for like a coffee table, something like that. So not cheap, but not, but definitely
but
affordable for anybody who wants it. Yeah, doable for sure. And yeah, if you could get a bigger company behind it, and you know, that was no mass production at all, you could definitely get the price lower. And I think that would be a good business model, especially for doing something online.
Yeah, and then you could like do a living room set. You could have a coffee table, a nightstand end table, and then a media console table, and those three could all kind of go together. Mm-hmm. You could buy them individually or all as a pack. Yep. And then you could also kind of just the same way like Shapeways is printing to order, you could CNC to order the same way.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting lesson in how tricky fulfillment, manufacturing, and those things are, and how they're almost a completely different art form than what we do is. And I've seen talented designers in architecture try to create prefab or modular home solutions and just seen them fail and fail and fail and fail. I've seen companies that look like they were off to a really good start. Have you ever seen the company Graycork? They were trying to make this sort of like very shippable, modular, kind of IKEA, but a little bit better. Sort of like you, so you could order a sofa the same way you could order a Casper mattress. It's a lot harder to do fulfillment and keep prices down than people think. And, you know, there's just so many options out there from companies that just have so much more, you know, sort of leverage and manufacturing advantages. So, you know, getting into the sort of physical goods game is something that is incredibly tricky. And unless you have disproportional brand value, like sort of like a Louis Vuitton or something like that, where you can just put, you know, the logo on it creates an air of value, or you have some, you know, protectable IP that keeps other people from copying you, and it's a very limited thing, I always say proceed with caution into these things. Now, you know, fortunately, you know, you've sort of teamed up with people, so to sort of mitigate that risk for you personally.
Right.
But making and selling stuff is a difficult, or, you know, being designing things to be manufactured and sold is a pretty tricky game.
Yeah. I think also to just kind of like step back even further, when you look at these things, I don't know if this is a pessimistic thing to say, but the bulk of the time, you're probably going to kind of fail at new things that you're trying. So, I mean, just look at, so making videos, right? That's all of our bread and butter. That's our wheelhouse. Still, you're going to put out a few every year that fail. You're going to put out a handful that are going to do better than what you expected. And then your typical ones are going to do average. But like when you're stepping outside of the norm and you're trying things for the first time, there's a really high chance to fail. But I think the important thing is for this one in particular, you know, I came out unscathed. I really wasn't taking on that much risk. They were taking on the risk and I was just kind of along for the ride, I guess. But, you know, if you have the opportunity to do those things and learn from them and come out unscathed, that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, just take every failure as a learning experience.
I got so many learning experiences this year.
That's awesome. So, guys, do you have any obsessions this week?
I can't choose Pop-Tarts again, can I?
I mean, only if it's a different flavor of Pop-Tart.
Yeah, what if every week I was just like, brown sugar Pop-Tarts.
Wild berry Pop-Tarts. And then after that, yeah.
I'm out. I'm out of Pop-Tarts.
Are wild berry Pop-Tarts popular because they're using wild berries, or that the berries themselves are wild?
I've actually never seen wild berry Pop-Tarts. No. Are you sure that's a thing?
Trust me, it's a thing.
is a thing.
The ones that are like, it's no natural berry color. It's like a purple frosting and like some kind of fluorescent icing.
Oh, you know what? I have seen those ones.
Yeah, it's like the furthest thing from any kind of natural like berry whatsoever.
They should put all natural on the box just to mess with people.
Probably.
Okay, I thought of one.
Yes.
TV. I got a TV pick that actually I still need to watch the bulk of it. I've only watched one episode so far, but I know it's going to be good. So one of my favorite shows, I'd say my second favorite comedy of all time probably, is Arrested Development. Have you guys watched that?
I have, yeah. That's the worst Netflix reboot I've ever seen.
I was just having a glass of hot ham
water.
What I was
saying. So the Netflix season 4 that came out, I don't know, 2 years ago or whatever, I didn't even finish it. Like, I think I watched 4 episodes and I was just
it was trash.
It was so bad.
But they remixed it. And I watched the first episode and it was really funny.
So they just like had a bad edit on it or something?
Well, because what they did with, I'm trying to remember exactly, but when they put it out at first, I think it was because of the way that they had to film it where they couldn't get everybody together because of other obligations, movies, all that stuff. So they kind of did it like character by character rather than having it be like the story in chronological order or whatever.
Mm.
So they re-edited it and they added in new things and they told the story rather than going character by character. They went more like as a narrative of the story. And so like I said, I've only watched the first episode, but I had several laugh out loud moments on it, LOL. But yeah, it was good. Like, I'm hopeful for the rest of them. And I think they're about to come out with the 5th season of it. So hopefully that's a good sign that it's going to be good again. Because, man, those first 3 seasons are, it's such a good show.
It is.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like that show is going to just be done. Like, I think it's hard to pick up that pace and bring you back into
it. Yeah, I could see that.
Also, I don't know. I think that's a show that had like a rhythm and a momentum. And also, like, it hit all those kind of actors all at the right time.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Jason Bateman has like better things to do now. Like, besides, like, Ozark is like pretty awesome too, and I don't want to get in the way of the next season of that. But yeah, no, that was pretty outstanding. My obsession is an Instagram account that I've been following for some time called Concrete Pig. So just go to an Instagram, just search Concrete Pig. They don't have a huge following, but they're super talented. Their work is, I think, consistently innovative, and they use a lot of familiar materials like steel, wood, and concrete, but they sort of mix them around in unusual ways. And I'm always getting really, really good revelations whenever I sort of look at them. So be sure to check them out and drop them a comment and let them know that we sent you, because I think all 3 of us are pretty big fans of their work. And in particular, the I was talking to Mike about it the other day. There's a sort of a media cabinet that they've done. And it's just, there's just so many good decisions in this cabinet.
Yeah.
So they did kind of almost the half river table concrete and wood panels for the door, right? So they took a live edge and then they sort of panelized it with either concrete or a black resin and made these sliding doors with it. Now, the cabinet frame itself, they did out of plate steel. And it's a really smart decision because it makes the edge of the cabinets thin and kind of disappear, which really emphasizes the doors. And it's that kind of thinking is what I really sort of appreciate them, is sort of selecting materials strategically so it emphasizes the points of the design that need to be emphasized the most. So check out Concrete Pig and tell them we sent you.
Yeah, that's a really great account and really unique. We were talking about it, about their backdrop that they use is instead of any kind of white wall or painted wall, they actually use plywood sheets as their backdrop walls. And it gives like a really cool, it's still like a really modern vibe, but it leans away from industrial, I think, but it's still just, it's just really cool. So,
well, it's kind of like flipping, it on its head, where like you see a lot of modern furniture in like a stark concrete background.
Right, exactly. And that's really what they did with the console that Ben's talking about, is the geometry of it isn't insane, but the way they're able to switch up the materials, it gives that case such a thin profile, and everything they're doing is just like, it's not insane, crazy techniques, but it's just the idea of using materials in unique ways and just switching things up enough to make it completely fresh.
Mm-hmm.
My obsession, though, and I am only going to shout out one creator that I met this week at Maker Central, even though there was a few really, really great creators that I hadn't met yet and hadn't seen their work. But I'm going to shout out Crafts with Ellen. She is, she's obviously a girl. I don't know any dudes named Ellen. But she is got a relatively young channel. I think it's just around a year old. And she does a lot more craft projects than any kind of woodworking. So she's got a lot of sewing tutorials, a lot of smaller projects, a Nintendo Switch case, Chris, that you might be interested in.
I'm listening.
From what I understand is she gets a little bit of hate from the maker community because she's not doing as many big like woodworking projects, but I think she's got some really awesome stuff, and I've been trying to learn and absorb as much as I can with this vintage chair revival that I'm doing, so it's been an amazing resource for me. She's doing really great looking content, and I think she's got like a really good kind of breadth of stuff that she's done already, so go check that out. Links to everything we're talking about are in the description, and those are clickable now, like I already said, so go check those out. So thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're not already, follow us on Instagram. We are at Modern Builds. That's me. At Four Eyes Furniture.
That's me.
And at Benjamin Ueda.
That's me.
That's some guy named Ellen.
the only guy named Ellen.
Yeah.
So make sure, follow us there. We are collectively at Modern Maker Podcast on Instagram too. And that's where all of those Rockler Plywood challenges are being wrapped up at. So make sure, check that out. Make sure that you're following along with the hashtag and build something cool, guys. There's still a whole month to build things. So bring us your best idea.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, this has been the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.